Good evening and welcome. It's KVC Arts. Arts and entertainment in our region as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Tonight we have Audio Pharmacy, mixing hip-hop, ambient soundscapes, some world fusion, and much more. Rick Dulock speaks with Maestro Ransom Wilson about what's coming up with the Redlands Symphony. We're going to start with Emmanuel Rogers speaking with Graham Elwood about a series of indigenous stand-up comedy on the campus of San Bernardino Valley College, now called First Nations Comedy Experience.
Graham, when you last joined us, you shared with our audience about the program that you directed and brought to San Bernardino Valley College campus. Will you briefly talk about this comedic show and how it came to be? I understand that the name of the show has changed. What is it now?
Yes, Emmanuel, thanks for having me on the show. The original title was Custer's Last Stand-Up, and that came from Micah Wright, who's the head of programming at FNX, who's Native, thought of that title and thought it was kind of a funny celebration of Native Americans' greatest military victory over General Custer, who, not that great of a guy. But we had some Native comics where, like, you know, some of us, we just don't like Custer in the title, and, you know, I don't want anyone to be offended. So we thought about it, and I said, you know, this is the first ever Native American stand-up comedy TV series, and I want the entire Native comedy community and just the Native community in general to completely embrace the show and get behind it.
Right.
So let's just call it First Nations Comedy Experience, because that's what it is. And also, like, gives the comedians, you know, some input and ownership of the show itself. That's how we came up with this new title. And, you know, we shot our first episode a couple weeks ago, and we're really, really happy with it.
Graham, how did it come about that you came up with this idea, and how did you get all these people together?
I've known Micah since college. We actually were in a sketch comedy troupe in college at the University of Arizona, and he came to me in the spring and said, hey, I'm taking over, you know, at FNX, and I need some new programming. FNX is a fairly young channel, and he's like, Graham, you have a lot of experience doing, you know, independent productions, which is a polite way of saying you've worked with really small budgets. So I... You know, I'm not offended at that. And he goes, you know, we're PBS channel, so there's not big money. And I said, that's cool, man. So I said, how about, you know, I've been a stand-up comic for 25 years, really since I was 18, which means two things. One, I don't have any marketable skills. and the other thing is all I'm really good at is, you know, being sarcastic and putting on shows. So I thought a lot of other ethnic groups have had their own stand-up comedy shows. And since this is the first Native American channel that I'm aware of in the U.S., there's several in Canada, I know, stand-up comedy is an American art form. So it stands to reason that Native Americans, the first people on this land, should be doing comedy for it. And Micah was like, oh man, that's great. It's also pretty inexpensive and quick to do a stand-up show because, you know, the comedians are bringing their material. And I just started to learn about a lot of Native comedy. I knew some. I knew Mark Yaffe, who was in the first episode, and I knew Jim Rule. He and I performed together years ago in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and the two of them actually and some other folks then gave me a list of all these Native comics that are out there, and I was like, well, this is great. And I started watching clips online, and, you know, they have a lot to say, and it's the most underrepresented segment of society. I think stand-up comedy is such an amazing way to learn, because there's two goals of this show and FNX in general, which is one, obviously, to serve the Native American community, but also is to get non-Natives, you know, what better way to learn about another culture than when you're laughing?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so, you know, it's even happened to me just watching a lot of YouTube clips of comics, and I'm learning about Native culture, and a friend of mine who's not Native was at the first taping, and he said, Graham, you know, all the, like, Native jokes in there, none of them went over my head, and it was great, you know. So that's really what we're really happy about, is kind of getting all, you know, world indigenous people and all different ethnicities and cultures on the show and watching the show. I think it's easier to kind of open your mind or change your opinions when you're laughing.
Yes.
You know, if you're
yes.
arguing, you're like, man, I don't agree with this, but if you're laughing, you're like, yeah, you know, I didn't know that. I see your point. That's good. So that's kind of the goal of the show as well.
I didn't know the show had any other goal except to make us laugh just a lot. Thank you for that.
Yeah, we're tricking you. It's like a Trojan horse. We're just going to trick you into coming for the laughter and then get you to think. That's the second goal.
Now, Graham, your first show was filmed on December 17th. Tell us about the experience on the campus.
It was such a cool experience on a lot of levels. First of all, the theater there at the San Bernardino Valley College was built in the 30s with, you know, FDR, WPA money. So federal money you know, was supporting the arts back in the 30s. So just being in a really cool theater is exciting. It was the first ever Native American stand-up comedy series and the first episode. So there was an excitement in the auditorium, you know. Mm-hmm. And Jim Rule was saying backstage in an interview how exciting it was because they've only ever had Native, like, one-off TV specials, never a series. So that there's like this, man, you know, here we go. And the audience was more enthusiastic and supportive than I thought. I mean, I knew they would be supportive, but I was like really pleasantly surprised at how enthusiastic they were. And, you know, I've been a stand-up comic for a long time, so I don't want this to be like, you know, the slicked up big corporate TV comedy where they water it down and comedians are only doing 4 or 5 minute sets. So we have everybody doing, you know, roughly 12 to 15 minute sets. Really, it's like more like a comedy club experience. Right. And it was so exciting. I mean, the energy in the room. And then at the end of the show, I brought all the comics out and we got a standing ovation, which I was not expecting. And that was, you know, you don't get a lot of those in your career.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I haven't. Maybe I should have worked on my act more throughout my career. But, you know, as a performer, when you get a standing O, it's such a buzz. It was so exciting. And all I see is this show getting bigger and better. And as we film, we've got 12 more episodes starting January 14th, and we go through the beginning of April.
All right. Now, I know in your last conversation with Rick Dulock, you also spoke about the first show being filmed. And after you watched it, you were wondering if there are things that you could do differently, if there are things you could move around. Have you found any of that? And if so, what was it?
You know, this is a great problem to have as a director in an editing room, is there was so much good material, it's hard to find stuff to cut.
Oh, that's great.
And that was great. That's the best problem any director could have versus the other of like, oh man, we gotta put lipstick on a pig or whatever. We're not doing that. So it's really the bulk of the show is going to be the four comedians, Mark Yaffe, Laura House, Sheila Shalaki, Jim Rule, doing their longer sets. We got a lot of great material and we got some good interview stuff backstage. And after the show, the audience in the lobby with the comics and people's testimonials about how much fun they had. So yeah, the bulk of the show is going to be the stand-up comedy, which is what I want it to be to begin with. So it's very happy with what we ended up with.
So I guess the only thing you can tweak would be to tell them not to be so funny, huh?
Pull back a little bit. Honestly, Emmanuel, the one comedian's act that I cut the most was my own set. I cut my act down because I'm very critical of myself. So I cut my set way down. But the other four comics I trimmed just minimally. You know, I'm going to MC 13 episodes, so I do about a 10-minute set live. I was like, well, I got to come up with new stuff for 13 episodes. So there was a couple of jokes I had done on the 17th, and I was like, that joke's not quite ready yet. So I'm going to cut that joke, and I'm going to work on it on other shows at clubs and stuff around L.A., and then maybe a couple weeks from now, I'll do it again. Okay. That's what I'm thinking. The long term, the whole 13-episode arc and all the material I'm going to have to do is kind of what my motivation for cutting stuff is.
Okay. But, Graham, now you also considered other venues. How do you see that choice now as not going to those bigger venues and those places and coming down to the college and doing the show?
I think it's great on a lot of levels because, you know, part of servicing the Native American community and letting these comics have a voice, we're getting comedians from not just L.A., New York, San Francisco, Chicago, kind of the main hubs of comedy or whatever. We're getting right. them from Oklahoma and the Dakotas and Arizona and all over the place. So it stands to reason that we should find a venue that is sort of speaks to the uniqueness of the show. And I think the theater in San Bernardino and the Inland Empire, you know, we're near the San Manuel tribe there.
Yes.
They help fund the network. And as I said, the theater is just beautiful. I've looked at a lot of locations throughout Hollywood and have performed at a lot of locations in L.A. and Hollywood and all over the country. And that theater, to me, stands out and kind of helps the theme of the show, which is supporting arts. And politically, I'm like a progressive and stuff like that. So it's like, you know, I would love to see the federal government start building more theaters.
Ah.
So there's a lot of great reasons for us to be at the San Bernardino Valley College Theater.
Well, if we could get you to run for the Senate, maybe we can get some theaters built and take down some of the defense budget.
Dude,
I'll vote for you.
You are preaching to the choir. I'm all about that. I will run for office. We'll cut the military budget and give it to our schools. I'm all for it, man.
Sounds,
you want to be my campaign manager, Emmanuel?
You want to win, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, as we continue, Graham, I want to slow down for just a moment and ask if you can remind our audience how they can obtain tickets to the show.
Yes, that's a great question. So if you go to fnx.org/comedy, you can get tickets to all the upcoming shows. So we have all the shows in January out for sale. It's every Sunday, January 14th, the 21st, the 28th. We take February 4th off, that's Super Bowl Sunday, and March 4th off because that's the Oscars. Otherwise, it's every Sunday through the first or second week of April. So if they just go to fnx.org/comedy, and you can see all the upcoming shows. The tickets are $15. They're $10 if you're a student. And because FNX is a non-for-profit, your ticket purchase is a tax deduction.
All right. So I'd like to remind the students out there, please bring your student ID because they'll be laughing at you at the door without it, and you'll be paying $15. Now, as you spoke, you mentioned that the next shows will be filmed on the 14th, 21st, and 28th of January. Do you know who's going to be appearing there on those dates?
Yeah, so on the 14th, we've got the Native Ladies of Comedy. They're three stand-up comics. They don't perform together, but they a lot of times travel together. They're very funny. They have a lot of clips online. And Chris Fairbanks, who's another very funny comic. So those are the four comics for the 14th. Coming up, you know, we've got, like, Craig Shoemaker is going to be performing.
Oh, wow.
Laura Keitlinger, who's, like, a TV producer. Stephanie Zamorano, who's frequently on the Jimmy Dore show, and she's on TYT. And we've got a couple younger comics coming in. Naz Janis, who's, like, a younger comic that I met at the Hollywood Improv. So it's really an amazing lineup. We get a lot of seasoned professionals. We are giving some newer comics some opportunities to get better exposure on TV. So if you go to that website that I gave, fnx.org/comedy, you can see the names of all the upcoming comedians.
Okay.
You're going to see amazing comedy. You're going to hear voices that you normally wouldn't see on the big networks,
right.
You know, stand-up comedy shows. So you're really supporting Native American arts and giving comics a voice and supporting the First Amendment.
There you go. I like the idea of supporting our fellow Americans. Now, I understand the series will be a 13-part series. When you're done with it, Graham, what do you hope that will come about? Are you looking to go nationwide, worldwide? What do you hope to build from here?
We have several goals. One is to hopefully, if there's a lot of people watching and there's a big response, is maybe do a little bit of a tour.
Okay.
You know, take some of these comedians from the series and tour around. Also, do both of the things you asked, and also try to sell the show internationally and really get the show, get the network, and get all of these amazing comics out there in the world. So we're hoping that this series really expands the reach of these comedians, expands the view of the network itself, and take it around the world. That's the goal.
All right. Now, I would really like to know how you managed to get so many good comedians together without them cracking each other up the whole time so you can get something done.
Okay. Well, the key is you sort of got to have a big green room with a lot of good snacks to occupy their time so they're not completely just goofing off the whole time. But you want, you know, in all seriousness, you want a fun, playful environment backstage.
Yes.
You want comics joking around with each other. That's one of my favorite things about performing is not just the show itself on stage, but the joking around with the other comics. And that vibe, I feel like, creates a fun environment, and then it translates to the stage, and then the audience in the theater is having fun, and then ultimately the audience watching on TV will be having fun.
You're also working very closely with FNX, the First Nations Experience. How has this experience been for you? How has it helped you to understand more of your own culture and the culture of those who are not specifically part of your tribe, if you will?
You know, Emmanuel, that's a great question, and it's been one of the great aspects of this job. Not only is it, you know, hey, I work in show business, so just having a steady gig, that's huge. You know, keeping the lights on, that's nice. But, you know, as I was saying earlier, I've learned a lot about the Native culture and, you know, life on some of the reservations and a lot of stuff I wasn't aware of. And as someone that's traveled all over the world, you know, I've been to Iraq and Afghanistan and Kuwait to perform for the United States military. I've done stand-up tours in Japan and China and Australia. I love learning about different cultures and to know that, you know, there's, I think, roughly 600 tribes in North America, and to learn about all of them and to experience the hardships they've gone through, how they've gotten through it, what they're experiencing today, and also some of the history that, you know, was sort of has been rewritten. I'm realizing I was largely, and many Americans, sort of misinformed about what happened to natives on this country. So it's been eye-opening. It's been inspirational. And I'm so, like, humbled and honored to be a part of it and to be able also to. I love hiring comedians because I know what it's like to be needing a gig, and the importance of being on TV validates you as a comedian and helps build your fan base. So I love giving good comics work.
Well, apparently I won't be working for you. You said good comics, so.
Working on your act, Emmanuel. We'll get you up there, maybe season two. You know what I mean?
Okay, well, these shows are being filmed before a live audience. What would you say to encourage our audience to come out and laugh with your wonderful group of entertainers and one another?
You know, you're going to have a great time. It's not, I know some people maybe have been to some TV tapings and all, they keep the audience there for 3-4 hours. No, these shows are like between 75 to 80 minutes. You're seeing professionals. It's a fun environment. It's a great value for your dollar. It's a tax write-off. You're going to have a blast. It's just a great night out, and it's in a beautiful theater. And, you know, there's TV cameras everywhere. You might be on TV. Hopefully, you'll have a little pain in your face and abdomen from laughing so much. That's my goal.
And I'd like to also encourage our audience to come on out, because this is the night before Monday morning, so you always want to laugh before you go back to work.
Okay. Yeah, and we keep it at 7 o'clock, so you're not out too late. You know, I know we people got to get up early, so come on out. It's a great night. You know, you'll be home in bed by 9:30.
All right. That sounds great. For some of us. Graham, I really want to thank you for joining us here at KVCR. For KVC Arts, I'm Emmanuel Rogers. Thank you.
Thank you, sir, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That was Graham Elwood in conversation with KVCR's Emmanuel Rogers. Once again, more information on First Nations Comedy Experience at fnx.org/comedy. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Up in just about 5 minutes, it's Audio Pharmacy, a group out of the Bay Area who are part of the rotation on the AUX, the music video service of FNX TV. More on that in just a bit. First, though, we have Rick Dulock in conversation with Maestro Ransom Wilson about the next couple of performances with Redland Symphony, the first coming up January 20th.
We're doing a concert that opens with Mendelssohn's Midsummer Night's Dream Overture, which is incredible. I mean, it's from the first notes, it's just like listening to the beginning of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker. You know right away that we're talking about a miniature world, a world of fairies and elves, just because of the way the music is written. So it's a wonderful way to start a concert. And then I'm really excited about the way we're ending the concert, which is a version of the Mendelssohn Italian Symphony, Symphony No. 4, that people generally don't know. It turns out that the version that we know and love and consider one of the great masterpieces of Western music was never published in Mendelssohn's lifetime. And in fact, he hated it when he heard it and decided that it needed major revision, and went about revising the second, third, and fourth music extremely heavily. And the foreign parts were kind of hidden away in libraries all over the world for a long time, and they were assembled about 15 years ago by a musicologist here in this country. And the parts and score are not easy to find, but we have found them, and we're going to do kind of a side-by-side comparison. It's kind of show and tell. You know, this is the way we have heard it our entire lives and which we love, and this is what Mendelssohn thought was an improvement on it. It's an incredibly eye-opening experience.
That sounds really interesting. That sounds very interesting. You're going to do that in front of the audience.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I wish there was time to do both versions entire, but it's quite a long piece, so that ended up being a 3-hour concert. But I'm going to pick some major beloved passages and then show the audience how Mendelssohn revised it. Improved is maybe not the right word, because, well, but it's hard to have any perspective on it, because we love the Italian Symphony to such a degree, and I'm talking about the world, that hearing it in a different way is really almost shocking.
It must have been really a challenge to figure out what parts to play, to choose from the whole thing.
Well, that's my job.
In March, you have a world premiere. Tell us about that.
Yes, Lalo Schifrin, one of the most famous composers in the world, most famous for his Mission Impossible theme, although that's only one of hundreds of things that he wrote that are memorable. He has written a tuba concerto that has never been performed before. So we got the principal tuba from the Chicago Symphony to come and play it with us, Eugene Picorni, who happens also to be a University of Redlands alumnus. The piece is nothing like Mission Impossible. It's really a neoclassical piece. It sounds a lot like Bach in places, which is not something that you would associate with the composer of Mission Impossible. But that's what he's done, so I assembled a program around it that's largely 18th century so that we can hear it in the context of the music that he was emulating.
We just heard from KVCR's Rick Dulock in conversation with Ransom Wilson, conductor and musical director with Redlands Symphony. Their next performance, A Midsummer Night's Dream, is January 20th at the Memorial Chapel on the campus of University of Redlands. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR, also at kvcrnews.org. I'm David Fleming, now joined by Sahar Kajanori and Audio Pharmacy, group in rotation on the AUX, the music video service of FNX. More at fnx.org/theAUX, AUX. We have in the studio now Roska D, Joe Lovespeak, Nick, Ahmed, Becky, a.k.a. Ramsal, and the founder of Audio Pharmacy, TioSense.
There was kind of like a little niche underground, like conscious poetry scene. And we were all lovers of hip-hop, so we listened to hip-hop, but at the same time, it's like you love hip-hop, but you hate where it's going. There's so much ego and money. It's just fueled by so many things that we didn't really identify with. But it has a good beat, so everyone's moving to it and singing a bunch of crap lyrics, you know? So as a producer and instrumentalist and DJ, I was making more conscious beats, you know, more organic and more worldly. And then my boy Seth, who was the first lyricist that I really connected with, he was just a really, really dope MC who was telling stories through the art of rhyme. And I just thought it was so inspired. And we connected, we dropped an album under the name 2 Cents, and we started just selling cassette tapes in the street back then. Eventually, I met my man Roska D, Keep Your Joy, Love Speak. I don't know, the crew just started growing larger and larger, and it became more than just this kind of avant-garde little hip-hop thing where we're selling tapes in the street. Eventually, we started selling CDs in the street. So, you know, we started traveling around spreading the music. Few things that I represent is the birds and the trees and the elements. Way down under the cement is the power from the earth that I implement. Move, whole body is an instrument. As the power of the earth shed the continent, that the spirit of the word shed the intellect. And then 99% gonna give respect. See, you know, in the beginning, we really just did it for the pure sake of self-expression. And at the end of the day, so many people started telling us that they were healed by the music, and it got them through a very rainy day. At the end of the day, I was like, oh, you know what? So many changes are happening. I think we should rebrand the name. And we already had created Audio Pharmacy Prescriptions as a record label name. But then when we decided to consciously change the group name from Chaotic Souls to something, then it was Audio Pharmacy. I wanted something to start with an A, and I actually called my mama. She's like, well, what identifies with you? I was like, I wanted to start with an A, because I noticed all the groups that start with A, they come up first. And I'm like, you know, internet's like big now all of a sudden. Yeah, you know, this is like 2002 was when the name was born. So she was the one that was like, well, you know, your music is so healing. What do you think about Audio Pharmacy? I don't remember any other options. It was like, yeah, that's boom. Thanks,
Way
Mom.
Cool. Yeah, thanks, Mom and
Dad. You're about to enter into a new life.
You said we added a few more members. I also read that at some point there were 30 people involved.
I guess the core membership in the band, actually me, Tio, and Keep It Joy, our bass player who's not here tonight. But there's so many folks that we met along the way. We end up getting them on the albums. The Moment probably has 30 or 40 artists on it. Black Native has like 35 artists on it.
Oh, wow.
So we have musicians from all over contributing to these projects.
And it doesn't just stop at the music either. Audio Pharmacy started musically, but it's all art and it's all connection and
it's community.
It's community. And when you start kind of breaking down some of those barriers, it turns into just a movement where we're all connected through our mutual values. there's no boundaries to this. So when people ask, what is audio pharmacy? Because I get that a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, you know, you got 20 minutes?
Okay. Oh, cool. So you mentioned Moment a second ago. This is the latest disc, latest album, I really ought to say, since there is a vinyl pressing. There's some bonuses that are only on the heavy vinyl. What can a person get on the vinyl as opposed to the CD?
Man, that's deep, because this project right here, there's this record, and there's also the limited edition joint. That's a picture disc. Each song on this album represents a different stage of life. It tells a story. There's a whole plot from beginning to end. The record has a drop card inside. You can download. It's not an album. I call it an audio cinema.
Good.
It has a visual component as well. So you can download that from the drop card. You can watch the album. It's mostly instrumental, featuring a lot of amazing people in my life. It's genreless. Every song is a different genre. It's deep. It tells a story, and you can connect to it. Like, the first song is the embodiment. It's basically the soul coming into human form. You can hear the baby being born there. Hmm. Bloom is the second track. It's a child growing, and you can hear it musically, but then there's samples from different like speakers or different activists, different movies even. There's vocalists in the album, but most of them, it's just the hook. So it still gives space for you to kind of imagine and tie your own personal experience into the concepts. It goes all the way through. Basically, the end of the album is becoming selfless. It's that we are all connected. We're all one. So at the end of the record, so after Selflessness is Karma, that's the name of the last song and the concept of it. Karma is basically the reincarnation. And so in there you hear a heartbeat and then a flat line, and the record ends in a locked groove. So the DJs that DJ off of Serato now, which are actually triggering MP3s from their laptops, like when you see the laptops above the turntables, they only have two records they bring to a gig. Like, you don't bring like a whole crate of records anymore. So that locked groove, you could actually trigger your whole library from your computer. So you could DJ with these records, playing any kind of music.
The one thing you can't do to energy is make it become nothing. You can't destroy space, you can't destroy energy, and you can't destroy consciousness.
I'm really excited about the cinema element. The visuals, absolutely stunning. And I can't wait for our audience to get a sneak peek, because when I saw the stars painted across the sky, and then I felt it brings like a whole new energy to the music, and really, you're right, gives you space to think and to interpret, and then to take wherever your mind is at the time.
If I understand it correctly, the album, Moment, is not officially out just yet, right?
No, it's not out yet. It's a very personal project. It's a little bit difficult to release something in that much depth. This one I'm a little more attached to. I mean, today's industry, you kind of have to have content, like daily content all the time, and that's sort of the formula. But this project has definitely taken 2-3 years for me to birth, and it's still progressing. I started working on this project at a time where Audio Pharmacy was doing really well, but I felt like the soul was kind of like not in there as much anymore, because we were so successful that we were getting 5-star hotels and the whole band is in, you know, different rooms, and then we come off a tour and we're not feeling that same connection as we used to when we're more grassroots and sleeping on floors and couches and then having home-cooked meals, family style. There's just so much beauty in that.
That's music from Audio Pharmacy and much of the core of the group in for KBC Arts. I'm David Fleming in with Sahar Kajanori, a Navajo, able to speak the language. And thanks to Sahar, there's been occasional opportunity to have some of our guests introduce themselves in their language.
Siwa Ma A Raskadi. I belong to the Makamo Mahilakana people from Drag Creek and Geyserville to Northern California. I also belong to the Habida people, mouth of the river, and also belong to the Kashaya people, where my maternal grandmother's from.
I think it's super cool because, you know, there are so many tribes and, you know, indigenous people represented that you don't really know everybody, and then you discover, wait, what's the name of your tribe? Like, what does your song sound like? Can you say hello? Do you have any songs from home?
Yeah. I grew up singing traditional songs. My family are traditional singers. My grandmother is our Yonta, our spiritual leader, and it's a matrilineal society, so we pass down these traditions to the mother and the grandmothers. So we belong to our mother's home. If you get married into somebody else's home, you get married into their mom's home, traditionally. And so that's the way that the songs kind of get passed, and the ceremony keepers, they're the ones that carry the ceremonies. And so, yeah, I grew up singing and dancing with my family, my aunties, my mom, and, you know, my brothers and sisters and stuff. So it's really unique to be a part of that.
Would you please grace us with a song?
Yeah, I could sing a song. This is our traditional instrument. This is called a hai bata bata in our language. This is a clapper stick. There's different ones. We use elderberry wood. I made this one out of elderberry wood, but there's different kinds. But it's just a piece of split wood with kind of a hole cut out of it to, like, project the sound. So that's what you're listening to. And we say hai bata bata because it kind of sounds like that. Hai bata bata. It kind of makes that sound. But, yeah, that's our traditional instrument. So I'll offer up a song for the FNX team and for all of those folks that are tuning in right now. This is a traditional Pomo song from Northern California, from Point Arena, Manchester Reservation. In English, in our language, we say habida, which is ha, the mouth, and bida is the river, so mouth of the river. Where I come from, we're right next to the coast. And so, you know, we have different kind of songs, but all of them kind of are revolving around our water system, the Garcia River, or Habida in our language, and the mountains where the rivers run from, Makamoma Hilakana, the two male and female mountains. All of our songs kind of revolve around the space. So I'm going to share a song from Point Arena, Manchester. Culture, we say, oh, you're saying yes, actually, but you're also saying, like, yeah, that was not cool.
Cool.
So, yeah, but that little bit about that song, that's one of our dress songs, and the women, they dance dress songs in ceremony, and there's certain sets of dresses that come with the dreamers or the yonta, the spiritual leaders for our people, and that song is one of the dress songs, so it's one of the fast dress songs, so it's when people maybe will be doing prayer or doctoring in our ceremonial house, so that's kind of the history of that song.
A member missing today.
Desiree.
Aha. And she's also Dine. Navajo. Mm-hmm. She's Dine.
Yeah, she's part Dine and she's also Mishawal Labo.
And gorgeous voice. And you really see her, like, the song be there in the video. Wow. The two of you, like, you know, you have such a strong voice, and she has such a strong voice, and the instruments just create this gorgeous, like, song with this texture, and it's like, be there, and then the lyrics, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, when the well runs dry, and it really has so many meanings, because, you know, you're touching on activism, and you're touching on yourself, and then bringing it all in with a gorgeous chorus, and we have soundscapes, visuals from your singing in the desert, and then she's in the mountain, and some city, too.
Nowhere to turn when the well runs dry. No one to help you when the hope crop die, yeah. No one to hear you when you ask God why. No one to heal you when your heart starts crying.
We actually filmed that video in Joshua Tree. And then the other part of Desiree's part was filmed in Yosemite. I mean, you can't even explain the beauty of Yosemite. I mean, you could try, but right. It's just so beautiful there. No. But that song in particular from the album called State of the Heart.
Mm-hmm.
This album was produced after 2 years of traveling with some of our core band members. Me, Tio, Keep Your Joy, Pasha Brown as a vocalist, and our drummer Kwame. We did 2 years as music ambassadors, cultural ambassadors for the American Music Abroad program. We traveled all throughout the South Pacific, Fiji, Samoa, New Zealand, Solomon Islands, Indonesia. And then the next year we went back and we went to Morocco, Cyprus, and Oman. And so this album was kind of created as like our set list for those tours. And then when we came back, we went into Fantasy Studios in Berkeley and really had an opportunity to record in a different way, kind of like old school style, like how we set up all the instruments and actually play all the same room, you know, like real musicians.
The album is virtually our live set.
So if you want to hear like a closest to what we sound like, this is the best
State of the Heart
album for you.
That's music from Audio Pharmacy and a portion of the group in studio. You're listening to KVC Arts on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming with Sahar Khajnouri, joined by Audio Pharmacy. They have a few videos in rotation on the AUX, that's the music video service of FNX, First Nations Experience. That's at fnx.org/theAUX, that's AUX. Coming up, we'll hear about Mama, that's one of the videos at the AUX. But first, Roska D wanted to make sure some of the folks not on stage got the credit they deserved.
I want to shout out all the visual artists across the board because we have so many talented people. You know, we got our good friend Jack Eastgate did this piece during one of our live performances. And then we have Noah, you know, he did this piece. He painted this live during the album recording.
You're referring to artwork on an album.
Artwork on the State of the Heart album. Okay. Pretty incredible stuff. And Nikila Badua, like we mentioned before.
Martin Travers,
another visual artist. Just incredible artists that, you know, they do these pieces for free for us. You know, they come to the shows and they're like, oh yeah, we'll paint this for you. They just paint it at the show. And we're like, oh wow, you know, and it's pretty incredible. And then we commission art as well. And we try to also pay the artists as well whenever we can. But I just wanted to shout them out because, you know, a lot of times,
behind the scenes,
you know, like for You Forgot About Us, that was our good friend Richard Castaneda, who's in that piece on the front is actually two Pima girls in boarding school. Their hair's cut and they're wearing like contemporary outfits, but they're like forced to wear that, you know? And so it's like, You Forgot About Us is like, and then there's bombs like dropping on them, like in the image, there's like bombs dropping on them. Cause you know, the album was during a really rough patch in our history. In America, we're entering second Iraq war and Afghanistan and all that stuff was happening. And so that we really wanted to come out with this album that really infused, you know, that history in that time period. And if you listen to the album, it really has a lot of that in there, a lot of the content-wise.
All the albums kind of have that kind of social political lens.
That's like one of my favorite parts about listening to Audio Pharmacy because, sure, if you were just listening to it and you weren't really thinking about it, oh cool, great beat, I like the instruments, but then when you actually pay attention to the lyrics, there's like this double voice discourse and there's like a whole another conversation under the layer. Mm-hmm. Brilliant, that is brilliant.
I actually have a new project that's for free online. It's called Black Native. It was a project I recorded with an elder musician who's a good friend of mine. And he's also my piano teacher, Ismail Versosa. And so I've been working with Ismail for years and he's pretty well known. He's the original piano player for Malo, which was the first Latin rock band. Jorge Santana, which is Carlos Santana's older brother. They had a band together and he was only 17 and they were like signed and then they went international and there's like, you know, they have songs that are played on the radio still. And that was a precursor to Santana. So they kind of opened the door for Latin rock. And if you look at the history of Latin rock, his band is in there as the first band in the Latin rock history books.
Cool.
Pretty crazy. Another sideline is that there's a new mural in San Francisco that was just painted honoring all of the musicians, the elder musicians in San Francisco. And his band is up there with Carlos and, you know, just all these musicians and this legacy of all these San Francisco musicians. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to shout out Ismail because he really taught me a lot. And we did this project to just really have this intergenerational teaching, not just for me learning from Ismail, but the third part of the project was teaching a young person how to create. And so we had a young one of the youth in my youth program, we had him come engineer during the during the sessions. And so we had this like three-way intergenerational learning happening. And so the whole album was this process of like working with this elder and like hearing his style. And then we would like make something and then like, okay, can you show me what you're playing or what you work on? And we would just like work out new tunes together, and then he would give me finger exercises, and I'd be like, dang, you know, because I gotta go practice.
Well, that's so totally cool.
And so that's how the album was created, and I just wanted to shout it out because it's a really great album. It's for free on my SoundCloud. If you just search Black Native on SoundCloud, Roska D, Black Native, you can get that. It's a free gift to the community. It's just, you know, again, made with love. A lot of times in the studio, sometimes I'll write three songs in one day, or sometimes I'll write, you know, usually on average, like 3 to 4 songs a week. But out of that course of a year, like maybe people only hear like 10. And so I have this whole backlog of hundreds of songs that are just for me and just for my listening pleasure, just for my friends when they come over. You do this for the love, it's nothing more. It's right. Just you do it for yourself and your own healing and for your own expression. And that's first and foremost for me what this is about.
You never were born and you never will die.
That's music from Audio Pharmacy and a portion of the group in studio. I'm David Fleming with Sahar Kajanori for this edition of KVC Arts. You're with 91.9 KVCR, streaming live at kvcrnews.org.
Yeah, mama, ain't no stopping her. Bring up the temperature, you can call the officer. Bring on the bombs and the guns and the onslaught. She cannot be on it, she cannot be bothered. I said, yeah, mama, ain't no controlling her. Bring up the temperature, call to the warriors. Bring on the troops, bring the tanks and your soldiers. She will not be home no more, we taking over. Yeah, mama, ain't no stopping her.
While we still have time, I definitely want to hear about Mama. And that is something that Sahar and I were speaking of before. Well, let's talk about the song and then let's address the video, because if you listen to the words in the song, it's pretty much spelled out. But why don't one of you talk about Mama as a song?
You know, it was just, the instrumental was just me making music, you know.
So you didn't have in mind a song later on? This was
Not necessarily. I played sarod in that song, which is a traditional Indian instrument. It looks similar to a sitar, but it has a chrome fretboard. Yeah, so we had the sarod in there. There's some turntablism in there. That's a constant formula I like to keep alive in all my music because it's almost extinct. A lot of people DJ now because it's push button. It's easy to do, to just play all these songs, but the actual turntablist, that was like a whole culture of DJing where like I would come home from school and wear a backpack for like 3 hours while I'm just scratching. Sounded like cats and dogs fighting, but eventually, you know, I perfected my craft. So in Mama, you could hear some scratches in there. You know, it's an organic song, and all of our music kind of has a similar theme. And I hit up Ross. I'm like, yo, I think this song I just made is pretty bumping. You should check it out.
So you brought that in then, and Ross?
Yeah, he passed me the instrumental, I think, on email or something. And I actually, at the time, I was taking my youth to we take our youth all over the country for events and stuff. And at the time, we were taking them to Atlanta for the U.S. Social Forum. And we had like 15 of us. It was like maybe like 12 or 13 kids. Yeah. And we got to the U.S. Social Forum. I remember I had the instrumental. I don't think even Tio knows about this. This is like the first time he's going to hear about this.
Excellent.
But I remember I had the instrumental, and I was like, oh, man, I got this instrumental. This is nice. And one of our youth was going to perform, and so I gave him the instrumental to perform it. And he performed his first time performing, and he performed this song called Conquistando. It's like about, you know, colonization, you know, and he rapped it, and all the girls in the youth program snag, they're like in the front row, they're like, hey, like cheering him on. And it was like his first show. So that was the origin of the song. Like, it started right there. After that, I was like, man, that song's pretty tight. He rocked it on that. So then when I came home, I started writing to it. You know, there's so many stories of these songs, but that song in particular, Mama, it's just about Mother Earth. It's about holding Mother Earth in the same reverence that we hold our moms, I think is really what it's about, is reconnecting back to Mother Earth the same way that we're connected through our belly button, you know, to our mothers, you know, and so connecting back to that.
Yeah, and then, so the video, the song is called Mama. The videographer is a very close friend of mine as well as ours, Pooja, aka Kali Shakti. She is Nepali. So the video was produced by a female and the song is called Mama, so it seems suitable. So she actually came out. Me and Pooja worked pretty closely in the video and we actually cast this little girl. We just found this little girl on the street. No, I'm just kidding. It's actually my daughter. So
yeah, she couldn't sign the waiver, so we got her.
So shout out to my daughter.
Starting.
Her name is Shashin Ashikaya. She's not so little anymore. She sprouted up. But at the time, she was like 4. She's black, white, Native American, and Chinese. Her name, Shashin, represents the guardians of the four corners. For those who haven't seen the video, she basically is in nature and she has a gourd and she picks up some water and she travels. This little girl is like, you know, we had her walking down the street There's one shot specifically where she's walking down this desolate road. Mm-hmm. So it's like she's going towards the city, but it's all trees. She's surrounded by trees and there's this road and she's carrying the water. You know, that's her job. Okay, Shishin, just go.
Beautiful.
And she's walking so far from us. I'm just thinking, oh God, I hope her mama doesn't freak out when she sees this video. And a shadow of an eagle actually goes through the shot.
Really?
And I told Pooja, I was like, yo, slow-mo that right there. You know how many times it took that eagle to get in frame just right. But so we got that in there. She walked into the city. We did a stop motion of her pouring the water. And by then her hair's tattered. Her white dress is all dirty. You know, we just threw all kinds of mud at her.
Yeah, that was the last minute, actually, the whole flower part of it. Because I remember we were trying to figure out, like, oh, where's this water going to go? And there was like this plant coming out of the ground.
We needed to find some.
I think it was me and Pooja were talking about, oh, that'd be cool if we just brought in all these flowers and then it's just like blooming at the end.
We're in like Bayshore, a real industrial area in San Francisco where it's just, you know, not a tree in sight. So she pours the water on there and then we had friends of ours come through and also add to that.
We did have Shishin as the official focal point of the Water Bearers, but if you notice in the video, we have people from different backgrounds and ethnicities coming to also put water into the plant. So that was like a representation of all of the nations coming together to water, you know, to heal the earth.
I'm glad you brought that back in. Starts with one person, just fades into another person.
Yeah.
So these are all friends of ours that are like actually community workers and artists. Like Smiley is one of the vocalists on Spare Change. And Arturo is one of our good friends.
Shelly, our neighbor.
Photographer.
And, and Love Speak was in there too.
She was pregnant.
And Sakima, baby Sakima was in her belly.
Was a controller, mama gon' show ya. You can never tame her, train her, or control her. You can only worship, caretaker, and hold her. Mama is the life giver, taker, and owner of our spirit, mind, and body. Our life we owe her. Some will never know her power and never show her love and affection. She will never lose. Mama, are providing our life. We love you, mama.
That's music from and conversation with members of Audio Pharmacy. Once again, you can find a bit of Audio Pharmacy on the AUX, the music video service of FNX First Nations Experience. That's at fnx.org/theAUX. That's AUX. Also more at audiopharmacy.com. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KBC Arts. Thanks again to Roskadi, Joe Lovespeak, Nick, Ahmed, Ramsal, and the founder of Audio Pharmacy, T.O. Sense. Thanks also to Ransom Wilson, conductor and musical director with Redland Symphony, and to Graham Elwood, organizer of First Nations Comedy Experience. With FNX, thanks to Frank Blanquette, and formerly of FNX, a big, big thanks to Sahar Kajnori. Sahar, you will be sorely missed. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Emmanuel Rogers, and Jessica Greenwell. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, Behind Us Now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs via podcast at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.